And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
I love the Raiders. Most of all, I love to win.
You're now listening to State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, and Tashawn Reed on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation post-game edition here on the Athletic Podcast Network. Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, Tashawn Reed, ready to try to explain to you the Raiders' 26-25 loss to the Miami Dolphins that officially eliminated them from playoff contention and assured that for the 18th time in the last 19 seasons, the Raiders will not finish with a winning record. They will attempt to get to 8-8, which would just be the fourth time in that span that they have been at least 500. Obviously, the 2016 season, the only time since reaching the Super Bowl in 2002 that they've had a winning record. If this was a different team, you would say it's unbelievable that they found a way to lose this game. But we were talking in the pre-production conversation that with the Raiders, you almost don't even blink. Their defense, just a catastrophic mistake there at the end.
I wasn't surprised. I mean, it's really amazing to say that. I mean, the sequence of events that happened, the long pass and the penalty, but you've seen so much of this team over the years. I shrugged, took some notes down, and kind of like wanted to plan my story. But it's just amazing how you get used to so many bad losses. And even Derek Carr said that this might be the hardest one of all, but it'd be a lot for him, especially for him. So, just a crushing loss for this team that actually had fought hard and played pretty well for the most for them at least for today.
Yeah, being there live. Well, first it just kind of surprised me that like Arden Key was like in the vicinity of like the quarterback, like while they like still kind of had the ball in their hand. You know, that hasn't happened a lot this year. But then I realized he hits him in the head. I'm just like, bro, like what is? And not even just like taps him, like that light, you know, passing interference call or roughing the passer call you get sometimes where you just raise him on the helmet. Like he's like raking him across the face, man. So I was so stuck on that. And then I finally looked downfield and see the completion and the guy was wide open. I mean, and put two together from there, obviously, you know, it led to them being in a really good field position. But it was still surprising to me just because of the sequence of events. Like individually, either one of those things isn't that surprising, but together, with 19 seconds left and no timeouts, just all of it coming together at once. It was something to see in person. Maybe watch it on TV. It's kind of like, whatever. But I was surprised anyway.
You haven't been numbed enough by enough Raider games.
I had a few this year.
Give it a few more years.
It needs to set in. Like, you know, it takes a little time. But the last call was cover two. And we saw last week at the end of the first half against the Chargers that they really struggle playing cover two because their corners like to bite up on the short stuff, even in situations where you want to prevent the long pass. Every team has its like pseudo prevent defense. Like, you know, they have a call that they think is safe where they don't want to get directly into a prevent defense just yet. And the Raiders is cover two. And after what happened last week at the end of the Chargers game, you would think either they change that coverage or they really harp to their corners, do not bite up on the short stuff. And the funny thing about that play was there was nobody in the flats. David Arnett just started floating in like no man's land, which made the pass so wide open that a 45-year-old man could make that pass while getting his head torn off the other way. I don't know if it's coaching, if they didn't go over that you cannot let anybody, you know, get a free release down the sideline, or Damon Arnett just hasn't not been paying attention in meetings. But either way, it's just an epic failure on the team.
I would say it's coaching in this circumstance just because, you know, I know they consider it a safe call. But in cover two, I mean, what's open on the field is typically the corners, right? And that's if you don't have any timeouts left and you need to get into field goal range, that's the area of the field that you're going to target is the kind of weakness of the cover too. So like, I just don't understand. It's 75 yards to go, no timeouts. Why don't you just play regular prevent man defense, like off coverage? So where even if they catch it, you make sure they're inbounds toward the middle of the field, they can keep draining the clock. Like they just, that call seemed to just play directly into the only option the Dolphins had, which was, you know, a corner route and then getting in field goal range.
But if you watch the other end of the field, like Mullins took with his guy the whole way. So I just think there's also common sense there. I think if you're Damon Arnett, obviously he's a rookie or whatever, but common sense, if you're on somebody and there's no one else near you, you should probably keep going with that guy, I would think. And I don't know why he would stop and look for, I don't know what he's looking for, but I just think it's basic, to me, common sense is you stick with the guy you're on and make sure that guy doesn't make a play. So, and Isaiah Johnson, I'm sure, was probably supposed to be closer to him than he was. He was way too far off when he couldn't react to it. So there shouldn't be that much open space between Arnett and Isaiah Johnson.
And obviously Johnson's not an experienced safety. I mean, he's a cornerback by trade who you know, was a former wide receiver in college even. So it's not really his natural position either.
I know Ted did a story, I think this week, on kind of the differences between like zone and zone match coverage. Do you think, Ted, that was just regular zone or zone match, given that Mullen followed him, but Arnett didn't? It was just Arnett making a mistake there?
It's zone, but there's different styles of cover two. Like, you know, a hard cover two is when your corners are going to bite up on short stuff. And there's a prevent cover two where, you know, it's a common call. A prevent cover two is you do not come up until the ball is thrown. There's no way you should come off your guy unless the ball is thrown. You have your eyes back at the quarter, you know, back to the quarterback so you can see what's coming, but you do not come up until the ball is thrown. And if, you know, that happened, they have no timeouts, the game is likely over. But I just don't know if they went over it enough or if Arnett wasn't paying attention, because Mullen looked like he was doing the right thing on the other side where he was running with this guy and he looked like he wasn't going to, you know, move off his guy. But on the other side, Arnett looked like he was playing just a regular cover two where he's just letting his guy through into that window where, you know, you're talking about on the sideline.
I was going to say, I guess like one thing we could mention is, you know, defensive backs coach Jim O'Neill didn't coach today for COVID-19 related reasons. So maybe that is a small thing that a DB coach is like, hey, you know, especially to the rookie, don't forget, you know, don't do that. You know, I don't know if that would have happened or not, but kind of those small things.
That's a good point. Also, his number two guy, Taylor Johnson, also wasn't there. So both their top DB coaches were not there. That's a good point. I mean, obviously no excuse, but I guess that's a small sliver of an excuse.
Were they coaching during the week at all?
O'Neill wasn't. He's been gone. But Johnson was there, I think, till yesterday, I believe. He was a late scratch. But I think the plan before yesterday was that Taylor was going to be there and O'Neill wasn't going to be there.
I mean, even the opportunity for them to win the game with a field goal was set up by what happened on the Raiders' final possession. And the Raiders, you know, they had taken the lead 22-16 after Derek Carr. Hey, for a guy who was not very mobile, admittedly, was able to make an off-schedule play, scramble drill, and throw the ball to Nelson Agholor for that 85-yard touchdown. Of course, the missed PAT by Daniel Carlson proved costly in a one-point loss, certainly. But that had him up 22-16. Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in. We have that 59-yard touchdown pass where the Raiders just displayed more, you know, terrible tackling, terrible pursuit angles. But Miles Gaskin on the 59-yard touchdown. But then it was the Raiders responded. Derek Carr leads him down. And they get inside the 10 and they decide that they are going to just run the clock down. They have opportunities to score. We see Josh Jacobs twice sliding down. Instead of scoring, he slid down. The Raiders were set up. They had third down at the 1 yard line with 1:05 to go. And they take a knee to let the clock drain down to 23 seconds before kicking the field goal. What do we think about that decision? Do you think ultimately they should have just scored the touchdown when they had the opportunity and forced the Dolphins to have to score a TD? I know Gruden says he does not regret it. He regretted that they scored too early against the Chiefs and lost that game. But Ted and I were talking earlier and made the point that, okay, yeah, first down, second down, go ahead and not score. But third down, you get it down under a minute. The Dolphins are out of timeouts. Maybe that's when you go ahead and score. If you can, you know.
I actually didn't have that big a problem with it. I know people, like, fans are going crazy because they're thinking, yeah, I got to try and score. And they're saying, no, Fitzpatrick's not Patrick Mahomes. But at the same time, on that last drive, Fitzpatrick was pretty much, you know, locked in, and that touchdown pass to Gaskin was only 6 yards in the air, but he broke like all these tackles and he ran around guys, and that looked pretty bad. It's like Raiders defense at their worst. So I just think if you're John Gruden, whatever faith you've built up over the course of the night is now gone. Okay, you know what? When he gets the ball back, they're going to score, whether it's 7 or 3, whatever. So we got to all I can do is minimize the time. I can't really affect them not scoring at some point, but I can take away the time which to have to do that. So to me, locking the clock down as much as you could made sense. Obviously, they could have done a better job with some of the play calling in the last, you know, minute and a half, but I get the overall premise of it.
I thought that was the right choice just because, and I've been critical of Gruden for being conservative at certain points throughout this season, but I mean, I don't know how, like, 19 seconds left with no timeouts, like, that's a pretty sure bet, like, almost all the time, even with the defense this bad. And so, I think if they score early with a minute and a half left and then, you know, the Dolphins come down and score a touchdown, then, you know, everybody's saying, you should have, you know, drained the clock out. So I think either way it went, if they lost, you know, people would have critiqued the decision that he made. I think more so the issue was the cause and just the execution in the red zone earlier in the game, especially in the first half. You know, just kept having these weird situations where they throw the ball to Jason Witten on a fade route, or you know, they had a Hunter Renfrow catch that was short of the end zone, and some other situations. And red zone play calling, you know, was issued last week as well against the Chargers. And throughout the season, they've had a tendency to settle for field goals down there and not end up, you know, scoring touchdowns. Some of that is being conservative, but a lot of it is just they have poor execution in the red zone when it comes to getting six this season. So it's kind of ironic that in a situation where they could have scored six, you know, settling three, I think, is the right choice in this last circumstance. But I just think if the Dolphins had timeouts left, let's say they had 3 timeouts left or something like that, to where they could have stopped the clock a little bit earlier, you know, maybe I would have just went for the six. But in that circumstance, I really don't think it's something to critique from Gruden.
I think that I would personally try to score on that third down. I thought that's what they're going to do. And if they didn't score, then they would be in the same situation where they could run the clock down and then kick a field goal. I would like to try to score on that third down and then try to go for a 2-point conversion, just because I think you're in a different world when you have to go down for a touchdown and when you have to go down for a field goal, even with, you know, 30 more seconds on a clock or 35 more seconds on a clock. But I don't have a problem with what he did. At first I did, and then I thought about it and I was like, 17 seconds left, no timeouts, and they have to go that far. That's pretty hard to do. And there's only one of a few things that could make that happen, and it actually did happen. So it was bad.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Amazing when you look at what the Dolphins did after going to Fitzpatrick. Tua Tagovailoa was not having a good game at all. I mean, he was 17 of 22, I think, for 94 yards. They moved to Fitzpatrick, and 3 possessions, field goal, touchdown, field goal. Up until the final 2 possessions, the Dolphins had averaged 4.6 yards per play. They ended the game averaging 6.1 yards per play because over their final two drives, on four plays, they picked up 109 yards, over 27 yards per play on those final two possessions that jumped them up from the, you know, pedestrian 4.6 to a solid 6.1. I mean, Fitzpatrick, he is something else. He's now 4-1 in games in his career against the Raiders. The only loss was in 2015 in a game where he got injured on the opening possession. He's become a guy that the league loves to root for over the last few years just because of stuff like this. And what did you guys think of that move? I mean, obviously, it was the right move for the Dolphins to make to go to Fitzpatrick. It wins them the game. It moves them a step closer to a playoff spot. It is surprising to see the way that they have done this, with a number five overall pick and Tua. But Tua wasn't getting it done.
Yeah, I don't think Tua was playing bad necessarily. He just wasn't. You know, he just wanted
playing good.
it wasn't like he had a ton of incompletions or a ton of bad throws. It is, you know, a ton of throws that didn't really go anywhere. It was a bunch of, you know, check down type stuff. And I think even, you know, the long touchdown that they had, you know, there with Gaskin, I mean, that was just a dump off pass. And he just, you know, made a couple guys miss and the Raiders had terrible tackling. So I don't know how great of a throw that was. Obviously, the last drive was something different. But, you know, I think, you know, it wasn't surprising just because, you know, that's something that they've done already this season, you know, when they felt like they need to make a change. And so, you know, Flores, you know, in the moment, you know, he's not worried about, you know, shattering, you know, young QB's confidence. So it didn't like wow me that they did that, especially I think at one point in the second half, they punted three times in a row against this Raiders defense. So, you know, something wasn't going right. But, you know, obviously Fitzpatrick had a hell of a fourth quarter.
Yeah, you could tell talking to, you know, the John after the game that he kind of was very confident in the game plan against Tua. And then when they went to Fitz, I think he kind of got a little panicked and said he's a gunslinger. He was hot. That was, you know, he definitely, you can tell John has a lot of respect for him and some fear with his defense. And obviously the fear was warranted. But I think definitely the game changed at that point. I think the fake punt was a big play. But I think the quarterback change definitely was a game changer.
You know, just from a quarterback development thing, I don't remember seeing any team really do that, where they have a first round pick, they decide to go to him. They were in the middle of a playoff run at that point. They really looked like a playoff was possible, and it still is right now at that point. So if you make the change from Tua, are you switching gears from saying we want to make the playoffs to we want to develop this quarterback? And then, you know, now they keep switching back and forth because clearly they believe Ryan Fitzpatrick can move this offense a little better than Tua, or else they wouldn't take Tua out when he struggled. So it's just a weird thing with the Dolphins. I don't necessarily understand. But going back to the Raiders, I really thought that, you know, even if Carr was going to play, they would have some sort of Mariota package. Just how well he ran the zone read and, you know, some of the things he could do with his legs, especially in a red zone where Carr's immobility kind of really limited what they could do. So it was just kind of puzzling not to see Mariota get in the game at all.
I don't think Derek Carr's leaving the huddle. If you try to tell him to leave, I don't know if he's leaving the huddle.
Take a Mariota zone read over and that goal line fade to Witten is really grinding my gears, man. I cannot believe they threw that. Like, are you serious?
What about that other like crossing route, like 15 yards down the field? I'm like, come on, dude. Like, Ted and I, like, again, we were talking earlier, like, dude, there's left tackles. I mean, there's offensive linemen that are faster than Jason Witten. He was saying that it looked like a tackle eligible type play. I'm like, you find a lot of offensive linemen that can run faster than that guy.
Colton Miller could beat him in a 40.
Darren Waller was going crazy. Not crazy, but he was having a really good game, like on a limited sample size. I think he finished like six targets and went over 100 yards tonight. And so, like, if you're going to throw to a tight end in that situation, why not Darren Waller? You know, obviously he's going to get more attention, but then maybe you get somebody else open. It's weird how they kind of, it's like they're trying to go against what they think, you know, which was expected from the situation. It's like, all right, you're going to throw it to Waller, so how? We're going to throw it to Witten or Alec Ingold. Or they had like a weird thing in the red zone where they more so go to deceive, I guess, the opposing defense than go into what their strength is.
I had to check during the game if it was Witten's birthday or something. What am I missing? Why are they targeting him so much? Because they have been kind of phasing him out the last month or so. Definitely Moreau have been playing more, and we had the touchdown catch. So I thought that was a good thing. But today, Witten, I think four or five targets, and I think Ruggs had two, which should never happen. I think that's another – you know, I think Gruden's made some confusing calls last few weeks, obviously. I think that was a big one. Also, that Rashard run – when they were marching in the end of the first half, I thought it was a big bad call that could have robbed them of a touchdown possibly. So I thought the play calling wasn't great again this week.
I just sent you guys a picture. You got to see this this shot of Gruden and Witten on the sideline. Just the look that Gruden has in his face, just looking at Jason Witten, just like, you're the man. That photo just kind of set the tone for what this game plan was. The other thing, Foster Moreau, two snaps. I think that's one of the big things fans are getting pissed about is like, we saw what Foster Moreau could do last year. We've seen in flashes what he can do. And, you know, that was one of the big fears I think people had was when the Raiders signed Jason Witten is like, does this mean Foster Moreau is not going to be on the field as much? And absolutely 100%. Yes, he is. Jason Witten's presence has taken Foster Moreau off the field and they're losing out on the ability for him to make plays.
That pick of Gruden and Witten must be after the first down catch. Cause I remember when it happened, I was like, Gruden must be fired up. Cause that was what he's wanted all night long. So it must be after that play, but yeah, it's weird. I mean, they brought Witten to be a leader and I was saying he's probably, they think probably a little bit of a better blocker than Moreau is, but at this point, I just don't get it. Doesn't make a lot of sense. I think you know what you have at this point. He's not going to like all of a sudden jump off the map and make a bunch of plays. So I think Green's been a little stubborn, I think, and probably not thinking too clearly. But to me, Moreau is definitely a better player at this point in their career.
I think Gruden is a pretty good play caller for the most part. But as far as short yardage, it's pretty bad. I mean, I remember last season when Alec Ingold was perfect on short yardage, like he would get a first down every single time he got the ball up till like week 8 or something like that. And then they started getting too cute and starting to do all this weird stuff, like motioning Josh Jacobs out of the backfield and then running, just doing a bunch of weird stuff. And then ever since that point, they've been terrible in short yardage. And it doesn't make any sense. They have a big offensive line. They have Josh Jacobs, who's a bruiser. It's something that Gruden seriously has to self-scout himself on and figure out what he's going to do. And I think a good person to study is Sean Payton. You know, the Saints are one of the best short yardage teams. Similarly, they have a big O-line too. One of the things they do is they use Taysom Hill a lot and they use zone reads. They use him a quarterback sneaks. And the Raiders are paying 7.5 to Marcus Mariota, who can be a threat. We saw how much of a physical freak he is in that last game. So I just think they got some serious issues as far as short yardage they have to get better at, because it's clearly cost them some games at this point.
You know, one of the other stories of the season has been inability to get Henry Ruggs involved in the offense. Two targets, no catches today. They threw that one deep ball to him. There was one other pass to him that I think was deflected and nearly intercepted. They did get him one rushing attempt for 7 yards, but I mean, obviously we're 15 games in. We know this is kind of just what it is. They haven't been able to really find the exact role for him in the offense. I think we all would like to see them attempt at least one or two of those deep passes a game to him. And they finally did. And Derek Carr, you know, to his credit, threw into double coverage and nearly, you know, Ruggs nearly came down with that. But it's just so weird that they pick him in the first round. They make him the first receiver off the board and really aren't game planning to him at all.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, obviously Nelson Aguilar, he had another huge game tonight, and he's been really good for them this season. But like I said, you don't take a guy 12 overall to use him as little as they have. You know, part of it is, you know, he's been missing for a few games. But even when he's out there, it's just – it's not even the deep shots to me. It's just, you know, kind of the built-in catches, you know, the screens, the drags, the slants, the really easy, quick routes that you would imagine – he can get separation on, you know, maybe he can't run a perfect, you know, post or corner route at this point in his career and get separation downfield. But you would think that, you know, he can get free on some of those shorter routes with his speed and acceleration. And even if you have to move him around the field, line him up in the slot sometimes, I feel like you have to get creative to get a guy like that involved. Obviously, the Raiders, you know, they target receivers, I still think, less than any other team in the league percentage-wise just because they love using tight ends so much. But, you know, if it's Darren Waller or Foster Moreau, fine. But again, like we've been harping on it, like, you know, Jason Witten has 5 targets in the game and then the 12th overall pick has 2. You know, and he didn't get a target until the third quarter. And so it's just weird that it's like they only take shots to him when it is the deep shot. Like they don't know that, you know, I mean, with the Chiefs, with Tyreek Hill, that's not all he does. You know, he has all these jet sweeps and short, you know, short routes where they get in the ball and allow him to create after he catches it. And, you know, I just don't get why they didn't, you know, use him in that manner more this season. Not to say that he has to get, you know, 4 or 5 catches every game, but, you know, at least more than he was.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. I mean, at some point, you got to wonder if they're, they say they like him, they say they got him for his upside, but you have to wonder if maybe they're not really totally happy with his progress so far. Maybe they're not thinking he's getting open, or maybe there's got to be some kind of disconnect where we're now in week 16 and he's getting two targets, and we mentioned here Witten getting five and just not being a part of many starts. He should be getting, figure Aguilar's done well enough that now he's getting more attention. That should open up things for Ruggs also, but he's not happening. So I definitely a question I have, you know, to ask in the next couple of weeks.
I think, you know, when that at target he had on that basic in at about 12, you know, that 12-yard in route against Xavier Howard kind of shows, you know, he really needs to refine his route running. I mean, he took forever to make that break inside, and then Howard's able to stick on his hip pocket. I think there are issues that Ruggs has to get better at. I think the Raiders knew that when they picked him more for his potential. If they picked a guy like CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, who's a lot more polished, then I think those guys would have been a lot more productive. But they like Ruggs for his potential, and right now he's not there yet.
All right, guys. Well, it's on to Denver. It's on to Tashaun's guy, Drew Lock. That's the Raiders' favorite quarterback they face this year. But a Week 17 game in Denver when the season is essentially written off, I don't know that they'll have quite as much success against him in that one. But we'll see if they can avoid another losing season. I know fans at this point don't really care the difference between 7-9, 8-8. In the locker room, I think it is a reasonably big deal. I think a guy like Derek Carr, you know, would much rather see an 8-8 mark on there. It would represent some small sliver of progress. I don't know that I would necessarily look at this as a season of progress if they finish 8-8 versus 7-9. Would you guys consider that progress?
I mean, I guess I would mathematically, but I mean, obviously this team, when they're 6-3 with the easiest schedule in the league remaining, you can't really be happy at 8-8 or 7-9. So I don't think, like you said, it doesn't make that big a difference, but I get for them why it would. I get why, you know, if you're John Gruden talking to your troops in the offseason, how you can say, you know what, despite everything that happened, despite all the COVID stuff and the injuries, all the problems we had, we still actually had a better record. We actually improved, and we're still on that right path for making progress. So I get it. It's going to be tough. I mean, I think that obviously this is a big deflator this week. And they definitely were all in and fired up, and I think it's going to be hard to bounce back from this one now. Part of me wants to see Gruden just like, you guys all want to see Mariota, but I think Gruden said, you know what, we're out of it at this point. We can't be in the playoffs. We're definitely mathematically out. And Carr definitely gave it his all, and he's obviously limited by the injury. So I'm going to sit Carr this last week and play Mariota, and just I think that would be kind of cool. I think that would be good for everybody. Good for Derek, good for Marcus, good for the fans. So that's what I think should happen, but probably won't.
Honestly, like, they're one Greg Williams play call away from being 7-9 again, you know, potentially. And so overall as a team, I don't know, you know, if you can really call this year a year of progress. I think offensively they got better, you know, and took a step. But defensively, I think they actually regressed this year, even with the additions that they made. And so, you know, they kind of were stagnant a little bit. But they had, you know, they had flashes, you know, the Chiefs win. You know, even in a loss, competing with the Chiefs for a second time, you know, beating the Saints in week two. They have moments where they look like they can do it, and then they crumble at the end. And so I think we know that this is a good team. You know, it's just really flawed. And, you know, some of those things, you know, are correctable. It's just a matter of, can they hit in the offseason, whether it's through the draft or free agency or both. You know, so far it's been one or the other, or in this case this year, really neither hit for them. And so, you know, I think you can kind of, the structure is there. You know, I feel like you can see the potential for them, but I think they just kind of missed out on it this season. And so, you know, they might have learned some things. I'm sure they learned a lot from this year and about themselves, but I don't know if they really, you know, progress this season in the way that, you know, what was expected.
I don't think if you could call it progress. I think if they won this game and won the last game, you can say you made a little progress. I mean, it's a winning season. You beat, you know, you would win two in a row. You beat a quality team like the Dolphins. You could have said you made some progress, but 8-8, you know, one win over the last season, another late season collapse. It's hard to say you've really made any progress from the last season. So I agree with Vic. I think, you know, seeing Mariota in that last game against Denver would be good. And not to take anything from Carr, I thought he played as well as he could with his groin injury, not being able to move well. I thought he played, you know, a good game for the circumstances. And, you know, some credit goes to the defense, too. I thought simplifying things, they looked like they were playing a lot faster. In the first half, obviously, there were some, you know, coverage blowups in the second half. There were a lot of injuries they had to deal with, too. So, you know, I like to see a little more Damon Arnette and Trayvon Mullen playing together. Obviously, a bad rookie mistake, but Arnett's flashed this season. Maybe they can improve a little bit next week on defense, you know, see what Mariota has if he starts. But yeah, it's hard to say that there's progress this season.
All right. Well, we will get back with you guys in the middle of the week and try to get you ready for this Week 17 matchup. I know a lot of fans want to put John Gruden on the hot seat. Knowing the way that contract is set up, I don't think that's really going to happen, but we'll discuss that in our midweek show. And otherwise, that'll wrap up this post-game edition of State of the Nation. Check back with us again later this week, and we will get you ready for the Raiders and the Broncos in Week 17 in Denver.
All right, y'all.
Later.
Hang in there.
Grab a drink.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.